Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. Here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Salvin.
Everybody, welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
Hard Edge.
I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
Pete.
And my computer is in the shop this week.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. So the music, a little weird. That's Booth Matt in the booth.
Booth Matt is back.
Very exciting weekend at the box office, right, Pete?
Yeah.
There was a bowl of peppermints right next to it when I went.
You went to the movie theater this week?
Oh, you finally
because
went?
Because last week, Justin didn't even bother to go see Iron Man.
It's a Poser. Movie. It's a movie, apparently. And it was good, though. Uh-huh. I did see it.
Yeah. Pete and I were very excited, though, because...
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas didn't do too well. We were a little shocked by that.
Yeah.
Well, I was happy to be shot. Yeah. We worked out this bit in advance.
It's very good.
Did I have a part in it?
No.
You're looking at me like, no.
Anyway, Speed Racer didn't do very well. We all didn't see it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anybody see Speed Racer?
Yes.
No. How was it?
I liked it a lot.
Really?
New drugs first.
All right, after the show... Go see Justin. He has the drugs.
I have a lot. I like you were like, Justin had a lot of drugs. And he'd be happy to give them or sell them.
Yeah, cool.
And that's true.
That I am very excited about the show we have tonight. We have four awesome guests for you guys. I'm going to introduce them all at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have for you Kevin Colton, John Levitt, Molly Crabapple, and Neil Klein. So, welcome to Dance Party.
I see your moves.
Thank you guys. thank you guys so much for coming on the show. We're very excited to have you guys here.
Yeah.
One of the things I was talking a little bit with you guys about this backstage, I think, is you're all working in a certain sense in an emerging media, which sounds
great.
Really
weird. Let's make this nerdier.
In a certain sense, I mean, you are working in print media, but you're also, the main thing you guys are working in right now is the internet, in terms of web comics and all kind of different ways. So, Neil, you've been on the show before, but right now you're working on Action Ohio.
I am working on Action Ohio.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Action Ohio is one of the contestants in this month's Zuda Comics Competition, which, for those of you who don't know, is DC Comics Online Web Comics Competition. And it's a superhero story.
That's a good choice.
I didn't have a lot of choices. So. And basically the concept is so Pete.
Yeah.
Guys, just excuse us for a second. Go ahead.
We're just gonna talk for a second. So you believe in superheroes, right?
Yes, I do. They're real.
Okay, good. most people don't.
What?
And I'm just saying, most people in today's world don't believe in superheroes.
I have to put on a costume twice a week to prove to him that they're a superhero.
What do you mean costume?
Keep the bedroom antics
tight.
So, basically, most people don't believe in superheroes because you don't see them.
Right.
Now, what if I told you that comic books are front for the fact that there's a town of superheroes living in Ohio? A small town of superheroes in Ohio that's been there since the 60s. And there's a cover-up that the Silver Age creators created the idea of superheroes to hide the fact that there's this town of superheroes there. And the comic is basically starts back in the 60s and jumps ahead to today when the world basically discovers they're there because there's a murder that ties back to the town, and the detective sort of blows open the fact that superheroes are living in Ohio. And the questions come up like, what are the supervillains, if there's such a thing, if there are superheroes in the comics that are basically there because of the superheroes, what are the supervillains?
Kansas.
Well,
maybe.
And I actually had a joke, sorry.
Huh?
And I mean, the story kind of goes from there.
Cool, I'm going to go to Ohio.
Well, read his book, I think.
Oh, okay, right.
But you go to Ohio if you want.
So how did you end up? I think one of the things that's kind of interesting. We've had a couple of guests who have had Zuda Comics. Each has had a different winding path to get there. So how did you end up on Zuda?
Well, actually, it starts even before Zuda with the comic itself. I actually created this comic years before. And I had been pitching it around. It was originally a Marvel pitch called Marvel Ohio, and because some of the characters are based on the Silver Age Marvel characters. And I pitched it. It didn't go over so well at Marvel, and I sort of transferred it to my own characters. And Kevin was the original artist on the comic.
Yeah.
And then I ran far, far away from.
Yeah,
him.
He kind of bailed on.
Oh. And you guys can't even sit next to each other.
This is awkward. Dance off. I wasn't even going to come tonight, really. But
it ended up much better actually than it was looking when I was drawing it. Trust me. I didn't gain my drawing superpowers until about 2005, which was about a year after this. So.
After Kevin left a career in porn, I went back to the comic and really kind of sat down and figured out, okay, what new way can I present it? And since webcomics are sort of the big thing now, I looked at a couple of places like Activate, where all these guys are involved in, the chemistry set, and various collectives, and I decided I wanted to do a Zuda book, and I found Paul Salvi, who's the artist on it. He's a great artist. He's got a Bruce Timm, Mike Perovic style. And we put together the 8 pages and submitted it, and they went for it. So
cool, man. Cool.
We're there. We're currently number 2. We were number
1. Yeah!
Big fans of number 2.
Yeah. My marketing director. And we were number 1 on Thursday, though. And we're going to get back to number 1. So
cool.
Yes.
Y'all should vote. Y'all should get your friends to vote. And pay for my baby that's coming.
Whoa! Big reveal at the end.
Yes, Neil is pregnant.
Congratulations!
Yeah, congratulations.
It's my 6 month.
Speaking of Activate, let's move on and chat with you guys for a little bit. So you're working on the book Backstage. Start with Activate, or was it always an Activate book?
Well, it was kind of a failed Zuda pitch. They did from before Zuda existed. It was from before Zuda existed, and Zuda didn't go for it for whatever reason. And so we brought it to Activate.
Cool. Well, tell us a little bit, for those who aren't reading it, and you all should, what Backstage is about. Because I think it has a very interesting tone and setting.
Well, you should be reading it. Backstage follows the adventures of two investigative reporters in 1904 Manhattan as they try to solve a series of grisly murders on the vaudeville circuit. It's a comedy.
I think my Akron Ohio pitch would have gone better if I did it in like a radio.
Good job. Also, now is an excellent time to buy gold.
Our country will not be crucified upon a cross of gold.
Oh, it's William Jennings.
Play. Really one out play.
Yeah, I love this one.
Yeah.
Let's also talk a little bit about your workflow, because you guys kind of go back and forth a little bit in terms of how you put the book together.
It's true. We have a much less factory assembly line approach than is typical in comics.
Like Neil.
Exactly. Where you take an artist, work them to death until they flee.
Somehow part of
I have seven.
seven children, I guess. Basically, me and John come up with a story together. We bullshit over hookahs and alcohol. John actually makes the story work and takes it from being a vague idea and, is the writer for it. Then he gives me thumbnails, and I take those little stick figure things and I turn them into the pages. All my pages are hand done because I'm a masochist, apparently. I'm the only person who will do hand done gouache paintings for their webcomic.
Nice Caravaggio.
That is like every single week somebody makes a Caravaggio.
I don't know why I thought it was going to be good to do 100 illustrations a month, but it was good for my checkbook. Days before poverty.
If not your carpal tunnel.
This is a one-act play.
Two-act.
Oh, well, I can't wait for my part.
Yes.
So you guys hash out the plots together,
right.
and then
we sort of do the thumbnails together. I'll do them. We'll discuss how should the pacing be on this? Do you want to do an extra page of just mood building?
And I'm like, no. And he's like, you will, or else. And
Or else the narrative won't make sense. Back to the drawing board.
And our letterist, our letterist, Howard's Howard DeShane, he also has an unusually creative part for a letterist. He fills all the backgrounds of things with strange jokes, including a narrative involving Uncle Sam and the All-American Monkey Band that you can look at if you look at the newspapers in the background.
Yeah, I was very shocked to realize, because I didn't even notice it when he was doing it, that in the background of all the newspaper panels, he was creating this whole sub-narrative about Uncle Sam's All-American Monkey Band, which you read backstage. And of course you have.
I love the blank, sort of deer in headlights looks we're seeing. Through the stage lights, I can see...
I'm still stuck on Monkey Band.
They love those tambourines.
We gotta truck through. We gotta truck through. Yes.
And yes, this whole like meta narrative in the stories, and you know, shocking stunts and giggling girls. Wow.
And you guys have something else coming up that you can kind of talk about a little bit.
Well, basically, Backstage has not seen print yet. However, there will soon be a porn offshoot of Backstage coming out.
I like to think of it as a prequel.
Yes, a porn prequel.
I see a new market.
They're doing a porn prequel to Star Wars.
Yeah.
Too sacred.
We may or may not. We supposedly.
Empire Strikes Dead.
There it is.
Genuinely block of sci-fi.
No.
Supposedly, we're doing an erotic prequel to Backstage. We can't talk too much about it because it's still in the supposed stage. But supposedly, there will be a smutty Victorian thing by both of us coming out sometime next year.
Congratulations.
My mom is so proud.
Kevin, let's move over to you. You also, now, Fishtown is kind of the big thing you're working on right now.
Yes, it is.
And that's a sequel to Fish Police, right?
Wow, that's a reference.
Nice. The porno offshoot to Fishtown. Sadly, no, it's not an offshoot of Fish Police. I couldn't get the license to that.
What is
that? I tried very hard. Didn't quite work out. No, Fishtown is actually a story about murder and betrayal that is not a comedy. Contrast to what Molly and John do, but it's actually based on a true story of a murder that took place in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia about 5 years ago now.
So it's like cop rock.
Kind of, yeah. Only with
also
a
anybody?
I think you should redo it with the murder scene choreographed.
That show wasn't as popular.
And do a porn.
Fish Police was much more popular.
I cop rock on DVD.
Wow.
Really? Yeah,
they turned
it. I watched it all too.
How did it pan out? Yeah.
Just get
yeah. Well, tell people a little bit about Fish Police. So it's this murder happens in the Fish Town.
Fish Town.
Did I just say Fish Police?
You did say Fish Police.
That's a lot of fish.
Well,
apparently,
police,
I really want to talk
fish
about fish.
If the police were actually doing their job, the murder would not have happened. it is actually based on a true story, and essentially it's told from the murderer's point of view through the direct narration. They talk directly to the reader, and it's graphic and violent, and I'm told it's pretty good.
Well, it's very intense. I mean, when you're dealing with something that violent and that strong, how do you write that? I mean, do you have to remove yourself in a certain way?
I wrote it very quickly, actually.
Okay.
I wrote it in about 4 days. I don't remember actually writing it. It was a 120-page book. I just kind of pounded it out. And then when I went back and looked at it, I didn't think it would actually be good, because I'm like, oh, I wrote it in 4 days, you know, caffeine high. And I looked at it, and it was actually kind of cohesive. So I just took it and I drew it as it was. I spent about 2 or 3 years drawing it, and it was a pretty intense experience. It was actually kind of trying on the nerves to get into the heads of these kids who just kind of thrill killed. And that was the whole thing. I've totally brought the room down. Mentioned Fish Police.
Yeah. We'll handle that.
Fish Police.
Hey!
Hey!
Hey! Hey! Let's show, huh? All right, we're going to move on with our first section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah!
I need to get my computer back. Okay, let's talk about Secret Invasion number 2. the second year issue of the Skrullapalooza coming from Marvel.
I was about to ask. I don't think you like this issue very much. Turn the tables on you.
No, I didn't like this issue very much. I think it's well drawn, it's well written, but there's nothing going on for however many pages of comic. Nothing happens. There's like two things maybe that happen, and I feel like I want a little. Yeah, all right. There's a big dinosaur that attacks.
Dinosaur.
Anyway. But this is the most unnecessary thing in the world. It's just so they can kind of clear everybody out.
There's a dinosaur,
and then the dinosaur disappears, and they never talk about the dinosaur again.
Yeah, in case you forgot, they're in the Savage Land, and that's why there's big dinosaurs.
Yeah. So basically, the Mighty Avengers and the New Avengers have been sent to the Savage Land on a wild goose chase. End up finding all of these Marvel characters who may or may not be shape-changing Skrulls. That are them from the 1970s. Meanwhile, Skrulls are invading back in New York.
It's nice to see Luke Cage fighting his stereotypical version of it. I think that's a little fucked up, right?
Yeah, racist. So
yeah, it's Savage Land. You're not supposed to use that term anymore.
What's the term?
Savage Land.
Not politically correct.
Yes.
Dinosaur habitat.
Yeah. Yeah, the dinosaur lobby is huge.
Dinosaur habitat. It's taken out of my hand.
It really kind of does.
Yeah, but definitely for a second issue, like the first issue was all the setup to the big fight, and then it's just kind of like you're still kind of there. We haven't moved on.
There's going to be a big fight, but not for a while. And the last page, I realized, Alex, is the Skrulls are in New York, but they're all like wearing X-Men costumes and like Thor wings. I'm like, the Skrulls are just wannabe. They're like kid brothers. Like they can make stuff that looks cool without it being like, I'm a Thor Skrull. So sad for them.
That's actual dialogue of the book.
Yeah.
Please.
It's actually better dialogue. It's the dialogue in the book.
Do you guys care about the Secret Invasion thing at all? Any interest?
Kind of interested.
Yeah.
I'm always I always try to follow what's going on. You know, especially an event, what have you. But you're right, really. I mean, I read this outside. There's nothing going on.
Yeah.
A lot of people look at each other.
I draw the line at shape-shifting copies from the past.
It's a very clear line to have.
You'd be surprised in trade paperbacks.
I only care about superhero comics if Wolverine is being sexually objectified. Otherwise, I can't be bothered to
I actually am the Skrull on the
panel. I thought it was Neil.
All right, let's move on and talk about something that was actually very good but took forever to come out, which is Action Comics Annual Number 11. This is following up on a storyline that Geoff Johns and Richard Donner wrote. What was it, a year and a half ago, something like that?
No, Richard Donner was born with this in his hands. That's why it's taken a
while. So they wrote the first four parts, and then they couldn't get the last two parts out for about a year and a half. So it's finally coming out in annual form, and it was kind of worth the wait, actually.
Well, it was very good. I don't know, I mean, worth the wait. It's like saying if they waited another like 6 months, would it still be worth the wait?
It would be even better.
Well,
what? It's like a wine.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You guys hang out too much.
Yeah.
No, but
true.
This comic is, obviously it's very good, but I also like that because it took so long to come out, they really took their time and made every panel, not action-packed, but really powerful, and like some of them, like when they're coming out of the Phantom Zone, like the panels are shattered, like
there's,
on the cover.
I think in particular, I said this to you guys before, but I think the layouts are really, really good in this issue. They're well-paced. You flip the page, and that's, you know, oftentimes I think you find that you get a reveal in the middle of a page in a comic, and that's more the fault of the person who's doing the layouts than the penciler. In this case, the layout artist did an amazing job of spacing it out the right way.
It's very clean looking.
Yeah.
And also, the story, the characters are so well done in the story. Lex Luthor has a couple great pages where he's kidding. He's like, so that's how it feels to kill a Kryptonian. And then there's another panel of him looking at a dead Kryptonian. He's like, I like that feeling. I was like, it's just so like crystal clear.
It's great. It's a great issue. Definitely, the whole thing will probably be collected in a trade, so I would say pick it up. Let's move on. Talk about two Iron Man issues that came out this week. Don't know if you guys heard, but there was an Iron Man movie, so they released two comic books.
Yeah.
Smart idea.
Yeah. One of them is written by the guy who directed the Iron Man movie, and the other one is good. Just in case it isn't clear, there's Iron Man Viva Las Vegas, which is written by Jon Favreau with art by Adi Granoff, who did the designs for the Iron Man costume for the movie. So it has this whole movie thing going on. Art's totally fine. It makes no sense. What were you going to say?
No, I was reading this, all like seven lines of dialogue that exists in this thing.
Very quick read.
That's one way to put it. I actually have a problem with the artwork. You can see here. Don't use photos. That's cheating. Don't use photos.
I think Kevin was pointing that out. You were pointing that out.
Yeah,
he's a rather good photographer.
Then release a book of photographs or make a movie. Oh, wait. Yeah.
It's just very light on story and what story there is. The dialogue is very awkward. It's
tell us, see what happens. At the beginning is a couple archaeologists are find a big dragon in this cave. And they're like, and later you see it show up in Vegas as an ornament in a hotel. And I want to know the disconnect between those two things. Like this precious piece of art, and they're like, "Hey, let's put it in front of the MGM Grand. People can put their cigarettes out on."
Yeah. Have you been to Las Vegas?
Just moving from the art over to the writing, I was actually noticing some of the dialogue in this outside, there's a scene where I guess Iron Man saves people on an airplane. And
he crashes through the roof.
He crashes through the roof, and everyone starts yelling at him, but start yelling things like "brute." Oppressor. I have never yelled brute on an airplane. I've yelled many other words, but never brute or oppressor. He was prepared to negotiate. And then, like, later, it's just the dialogue is really bad.
Yeah, it's awful. On the other hand, you have Invincible Iron Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally blanked on that for a second. Which is the first issue of a new series by Matt Fraction. And it's really fun and well written and exactly what people should actually want when they come out of the Iron Man movie. It does a really nice job of taking the Iron Man that currently exists in the Marvel Universe and making him enough like the Iron Man that you see in the movie where it doesn't feel like a complete betrayal of the character.
He explains the extremist armor thing, but Pepper Potts is there, so it's a great bridge. That's obviously what they designed it for.
Right.
What I actually liked about it is I think when Warren Ellis was writing Iron Man, one of the things he said was that Iron Man was the test pilot for the future, and you really get that from this.
Right.
There's a lot of, like, just kind of taking his technology and moving it to such a far step beyond what it should be. And it shows up in one and not so much in the other.
Right. So definitely pick up Invincible Iron Man. Don't pick up Iron Man Deal.
Matt Fraction, he is like superstar.
I got an Iron Man question because I actually saw the movie this week. And one thing that kind of stuck with me is that I think even in this issue and years before, Iron Man always carried around his suit in like a little briefcase. Now, I watched that movie, and I saw him build that thing like four times. And it's huge. How did he get it in the briefcase?
Well, here's what he did.
I think the obvious answer is he made a shrink ray and then shrunk it down and put it into the briefcase.
That's definitely the obvious.
I think we're going to keep the shrink ray.
Well,
the briefcase.
No, here's the thing, is that basically as long as you fold it along the same lines each time, it doesn't get all. Yeah, exactly. Hope that answers your question.
Sure. Yeah.
Great. Talk about Joe Kubert's Tor number one, rebooting his caveman character.
Yeah.
Huge reboot. God, they made some major changes.
Yeah, now he's in modern times.
No.
And immediately she goes for it.
Shut up.
Whoa. What's going on
over
there? She's getting erotic with Joe Kubert.
This was actually really good.
Yeah.
I was very surprised by it. The art's good. The story, it's exactly what I didn't like about the dinosaur crashing through the dinosaur reservoir, or whatever we're calling it. number two.
Yeah.
This is another secret land full of dinosaurs and magical creatures and whatnot, with a caveman lost in it. Not a lot of dialogue, but it completely works for me.
Yeah. It's, you don't have to, if you do it well, you know, I really think it has a lot to do with the writing and obviously the artwork, but like,
I was like, at first I was like, what is this? Oh, this is going to suck. And I was like, oh, this is actually very enjoyable, well-paced, and it's written in a way where you're not like, oh, this is just a stupid caveman running through the woods, where it's like, it's actually entertaining, and you're reading along going, I can't wait to see what happens next.
It's like watching a nature program where you kind of watch the guy, he splashed in the water, and you're like, and there's a smile on his face. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, go get him. So I liked it. Then there's a forearm dude at the end. Didn't see that coming.
It's Goro.
Nice.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Mortal Kombat?
It's a Mortal Kombat crossover.
Yeah, Joe Kubert was huge into Mortal Kombat.
He loved it. He kicked my ass one time.
Yeah, man, he could play.
That was amazing. He was playing Scorpion. All right, let's move on. The dorkiest thing we've ever talked about. Let's move on and talk about Amazing Spider-Man 558. Pete, I want to turn to you specifically because...
Before we review this, I think Pete and I should switch brains because that's what happened here. Because Pete liked this and I did not.
It's weird. I'm finally coming...
You know, this is still with the Mary Jane, Mephisto... No,
shit. Shut up. obviously I was hugely upset at the Spider-Man brain trust for raping the Spider-Man world.
Every time you do this, wow. It's like you're giving a confessional to someone else.
Yeah. Anyways, so I'm finally coming to grips with the fact that, they're not going to do a huge recon move and be like, hey, sorry for undercutting everyone's intelligence. It's wearing off. My anger is wearing off, and I feel like in this issue, Spider-Man's voice is really starting to come back. His banter was very enjoyable. I wasn't upset the whole issue. And I thought it was a really cool moment where JJ was going to, like, spaz out and then, like, kind of do. So,
I think he learned a lesson.
This issue is by Bob Gale, who wrote the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah. They got to get him off this Spidey brain trust, because his work sticks out so much. And it's not that it's horrible, it's just seems very dated compared to everyone else's. And so,
especially
I don't know.
The part with the DeLorean.
Yeah, I don't know. That's necessary.
Wow.
I like the part with the rocket skateboard. That was pretty cool.
Is that
BG?
Yeah. Oh, I only follow Spider-Man in the newspaper comics, because it's agreeably strange. I don't know if anyone else does through Josh Reeves, but when he was all upset at Mary Jane for being more famous than he was...
Was that recently?
What's a newspaper?
It's like a blog made out of paper.
No, it's cheap insulation.
Oh, yeah.
I thought those were dollar bills.
Yeah, I get the pink newspaper then, and it cuts up my hands.
Am I not
too complicated? I am right between you guys because I thought this was totally fine.
I hate it when you say that. It's like saying something bad and nice at the same time.
Fine.
Yeah, that word
really?
Is, makes me.
Do you guys agree? Is fine a bad word to use?
It's a fine word.
Oh,
I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I guess it is contemptible. I guess I didn't like it. Okay, there
yeah.
we go. No, I really do think that it's a totally solid issue of Spider-Man. It's bringing together a lot of the ideas they've been doing throughout the run. There's nothing special about it necessarily, but...
So it's bad, right?
Yeah.
Special issue. Okay.
All right, let's move on and talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, number 14. Now, Pete, you rushed up to me after you had read this and said, did you read it yet?
Because I thought every time there is a big kind of like last page reveal or something happens in this comic, you're always like, oh, I cried, I gasped, I dropped my doll. You know, there's a lot of...
I have never dropped my daughter. Never dropped her.
So
she would hurt herself too.
So I immediately, with the last page reveal, was like, oh my god, Alex has got to be freaking out. But you were the exact opposite.
Well, look, okay, here's the thing. For those of you who are reading, this is a continuation of, official continuation of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 8, technically. It's written by Joss Whedon and some other people. This arc is by Drew Goddard. No.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. By Drew Goddard, who also wrote for the show. Joss Whedon is executive producing, so he's overseeing all the plot points. I'm not going to specifically spoil it for you, but here's the thing. If you
ever watch anything that Joss Whedon has ever done, you know that if two people fall in love with each other, one of them is going to die in a horrible way very quickly.
Yes.
So when somebody dies in a horrible way very quickly at this end of this issue, it was not a huge shocker.
I, you know, it's just, you freak, you freak out like
it also
somebody
that
kisses.
Yeah.
You know, I just figured that this would be a big moment for you, and I was a little disappointed that it
wasn't. Well, I just, I mean, the character that died hasn't been in it very long, so it's not like.
Yeah, but
it
it's
wasn't,
also.
I didn't know specifically it was coming, and I was like,
yeah,
oh,
but,
who cares?
I mean, what's Andrew going to do now?
Well, we're slowly ruining this. I love this. Like,
at this point, you might as well just tell me.
Yeah, well, I don't even know the character's name. That's how
it's Buffy.
How did you get Buffy?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
She's died before.
She'll get over it.
Really bad. It counts on TV.
Regardless of that, it's a good issue. It's a good series.
Yes.
Yeah. Take it up.
Yeah.
Alright, let's move on to talk about a series that is closing up its run.
Yeah.
Logan number 3 by Brian K. Vaughan. Pete, Wolverine, Molly, Wolverine.
Yeah.
Talk.
Well, first of all, what I really enjoy about the Logan run that they did is they.
Logan run! Nailed it.
Is that they give you the option of the black and white, which for me is a no-brainer, but it's also a nice option because there's no ads. There's nothing to take me out of my special little world. And, what? It's like a new term for you guys? What?
No, I get in a little place and you read your little funny books.
This is like. This is my CNN. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's why you believe in superheroes. I disconnected. This book, I don't know. I didn't get excited about it.
What?
It just wasn't that, I don't know.
Aw, shut up, dude.
Why? What was so great about it? Wolverine's fighting another guy that's hard to kill, and then he looks like he's going to lose, and then he wins.
Yeah!
Well,
that's amazing!
No, but that's the same shit. And every time they do a little limited series, it's like, oh, he's going to be in some weird place. And he's gonna almost die. And this one, the guy rips his heart out. You're like, God, that would really be bad. Oh, there he is, standing up. And then you're like, okay.
Yeah, but to be fair, he rips his heart out. And Wolverine's like,
Thank you, Alex.
So
this
is
like, what to defend me?
He's making fun of you.
Am I? I think that's fine. I think that's fine. That's fine. Molly, there's a bit of a shirtless Wolverine in here. Good, bad?
Well, I mean, I find it interesting that Wolverine started his comics life as this kind of, like, squat, hairy dude, and has just become basically the male equivalent of what they do to female superheroes, in the sense of, let's have him in the movie having his clothes ripped off in someone's mind. Here, let's have gratuitous bathing scenes of him. Let's get him tall and romantic. No, Wolverine, I mean, the story gets very short. The dramatic tension is resolved with kicking. It's not so great, but it's beautifully drawn.
True.
Yeah.
And it's written by Brian K. Vaughan. You know, you kind of expect more from that guy.
Oh, shut up. It's fantastic.
The reason they show Wolverine all the bathing scenes is because of letters from guys like Pete.
Sticky letters.
All right, that's
you mail
the snack. It is time for our next session, which is called Stinky Letters. Actually, what it's called is Audience Questions, and you guys made it up. For that, we're going to bring
this
out.
Is your paper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sticky, sticky letters.
Wow.
Here's your first question. What is the best European comic book you've ever read?
Ooh.
Right?
Is Sheldon stumped right now?
I mean,
that's
I
ever happened.
I didn't read it as a European comic. I think NBM translated it. But I think The Pirate. It's like a... I don't actually know when it's set. But it's set in Europe, and it's about this artist who kind of gets caught up in piracy because he needs to make some money, and instead of doing like photographs of pirates, he's actually brought on originally to do paintings, and that's kind of gets caught up in their world and what have you. It's like a two-volume set. So there's that, and then also this has also been translated by Drawn Quarterly. It's the Paul series.
Paul goes fishing. Paul in the country. Paul has a summer job.
Paul has a summer job. That sounds fantastic.
they're actually really great books. They're for kids. I mean, they're about this guy, you know, guy who's basically a graphic designer who's supposed to be, I think, the artist who, and the name escapes me. It's Michelle or Bagliati. And it's about his life starting from basically being in high school, moving up to graphic design school, and then getting married and having children. It's a good book.
Cool.
I would say Cages by Dave McKean, although I think Tundra did that originally. It was by the American, but he's a British artist, so I guess it counts.
We'll give it to you.
Yeah, whatever. It defies description completely, but it's pretty damn good book. So
it's not a description.
What's that?
That's a description.
Yeah. That's my description, is that it defies description. It's about this guy.
Hey,
he's an artist.
Hey!
Like Paul.
It's about a guy. Yeah, I can relate to that.
I mean, it's a kind of hard question because, like, all my favorite comics are done by people who aren't American. I mean, there's the Sandman and the, you know, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and, you know, British domination. But one thing I really like, it's not really...
British domination.
Shut up. It involves boarding schools and polo sticks. God. No, but one of my favorite European books is The Borgias by Milo Manara. Just because it's so, like, weird and over the top, like, oh no, they're going to be evil. Now they're going to crucify the one virtuous man in Rome. Now there's going to be an orgy. Now he's going to fuck his sister. Now they're going to tear someone's eyes out in graphic detail. And it's also beautifully drawn. I really enjoy that one.
I want to change my answer.
Yeah. If I had to pick someone on this panel who's watched Caligula, I think it would be. Am I right?
There's a thread to all your answers, Molly.
Yeah.
We know why I read comics.
Why do you read comics?
Cool.
Bella, slowly.
Excalibur.
Yeah.
Excalibur
like
said...
That's Canadian. Yeah. I saw a French comic with a guy with a puma head. It looked a little puma head.
Did you see it or did you read it?
I saw a poster of it.
It's not the same as
wild. I've heard of Tintin.
Yeah.
Ten.
If you say it, you're a Canadian. Did I say European?
I was actually going to say, this is a little bit of a cheat, but Sky Doll comes out tomorrow. Read the first issue of that, and it's actually really good. It takes, I felt like, a little while to get into, but it builds this really interesting, comprehensive world right from the top. It's being released in English by Marvel tomorrow, so I'd say check that out.
This probably doesn't count, but Andy Diggle did Gamekeeper, and that's based in Britain.
We are terrible people.
I'm not cool enough to read European comics.
Okay, how important is diversity in comics to you, and is there such a thing as too much?
Ooh. Well, diversity of...
Well, yeah, I mean, I like there to be, like, good superheroes and better superheroes.
Yeah. You mean like different, like, super villains and superheroes?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What you mean, right?
Yeah.
Diversity of what?
I mean, diversity, yeah. Well, we can ask for that.
I don't know. I think with the...
They're cultural.
Mean, yeah.
Well, in characters or creators?
Curious
styles?
Huh? Talking about, like,
genre?
Indie versus mainstream?
What do you mean?
Explain yourself.
Both racial and sexual, from the creators, from the characters, from all across the board. Like,
absolutely important.
Their plurality of opinion.
I think it is. It's very important. And it's not. It's not as much as it should be. I think there should be more diversity in comic book characters and stories. But at the same time, you don't want it to be, like, obvious, where it's like a ad for, like, a college, where it's like you got the Asian guy behind the microscope, and then, you know, guy with the pipe, and, you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, the smart professor who has a pipe to show
that. I hate that stereotype.
I know.
It's dogged me by the time.
Yeah. Where's your pipe, Salvin?
Shut up!
You know what's actually really good with it, though? Emil Gaiman. He has,
yes.
I mean, it's funny. You don't even notice it at first. You're just like, wow, what compelling, interesting characters. And then you're like, wow, there's like a transsexual main character, and there's like a Puerto Rican lesbian. And you know, you realize it only later because they're such good characters, yeah. You know. I think he's probably, I think, the best I've seen at it.
Grant Morrison.
Yeah. Well, it's because it seems like it serves a story. When it's forced in, you can tell.
Well, that's just right. Captain Planet.
He brings all the powers.
The black guy who controls fire.
I think the greatest comic book I ever saw was, I don't remember what book I saw it in, but there was like, it was single panels of every single Marvel superhero. It was like Captain America, Hank Pym, and they were all like white blonde guys, but they all looked the same in every panel. There was like 10 of them. At a certain point like in Marvel's history where it was they all just looked the same.
Well, I mean, I think it comes from the fact that the majority of comic book writers are white males. And so there's two things going on there. One is that they feel, you know, they feel a certain amount, they can't relate to it. You know, they can't relate to another experience other than being a white male. And then on the other side of things, they're scared to write anything the wrong way. So they end up just writing white males, and that's pretty much it.
But the Europeans don't seem to have a problem with that.
Well, there's more of a
cultural...
Well,
we wouldn't know.
Cultural, yeah. Look at this panel. you know, Europe, there are more cultures at play, I think, there. So you see more blending. It's hard because it seems like so many, especially old school comic book creators, came from a very similar background. Right. And it takes a while for that to kind of wear off. But one of the biggest complaints I have about comics in general is the sameness. Like, talking about that Wolverine story, like, we can tell other stories about Wolverine. He is an interesting character. He has endured all these things. Like, he doesn't have to maybe do the same things every time. And bringing more diverse people from diverse backgrounds as creators in there will bring more stories, different stories.
I think there's also sometimes fear of a writer.
What the hell was that?
I caught that. I think
you're going to cry. Was that your soul?
Guys, I have a heart.
I think there's also a sense of fear sometimes of a creator when they don't know something like that. I mean, how many characters have been out there that have been, you know, different ethnicities that have been just insulting?
Right.
You know, the biggest complaint has always been DC Comics Vibe, which was a Hispanic character that was just not handled well.
Well, there was a controversy a little bit when Vixen, the character,
right.
They were slowly whitening her skin tone over like
oh
the first
God.
8 issues of JLA or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoop. Pay attention to that.
Yeah, and then even going back to something like Crisis on Infinite Earths, they introduce the Asian female Dr. Light, and I think she announces herself as, I am the new Dr. Light from Asia! what? You know, that's unnecessary.
Yeah, and then I think DC put out a while ago, and I'm Jewish, so I tend to want to read Jewish comics, and they put out Caper by Judd Winnick, which was kind of about the Jewish mafia a little bit, which is something that I'm very interested in. I did a book about the Jewish mafia, and I was really, really looking forward to the book, but there was a lot of like oy veys and you know like schmucks and things like that kind of sort of turned me off for it, and I felt like you can write a Jewish character who doesn't have to speak like Jackie Mason. You know?
Oh, come on, you're such a schmuck. Can we get the next question?
Yeah.
So yes, more diversity.
Diversity. Yes. Your favorite web comics?
What these guys make.
Yeah. Well, I gotta like be an ass cast because one of my favorite webcomics is Fishtown. I fucking no, Fishtown is like this. If you haven't read it, please read it. It's like this journey into the heart of like sadistic, fucked up teenage wasteland darkness. It's so good.
And it's drawn so well. You like it?
What, are you just saying that it's a fine comic? Is that what you're saying?
No, because you said it was such pleasure, the sadistic.
I'm actually putting that on the book, Jack.
Yeah,
that was a great description.
I also love the first Zooto Comics winner, Bayou, which is just this like perfectly drawn, brilliant like exploration of like the Jim Crow South, and it's fucking heart wrenching. Like it's wonderful.
Yeah, Zooto has a few really good comics. Like High Moon is really good, and Night Owls is fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Acton, Ohio is pretty good.
So much Strangle Switch,
man. No, I made a cameo in High Moon one. the creator of Headwind's a friend of mine. That's also an awesome comic. And so if you look for the dance hall girl scene, you'll see the cameo. It's hilarious if you look at it.
Mm. Famous.
Yeah, that's cool.
She made it on the show after all.
Yes, I know, right?
Oh, well, she likes adult, serious, mature comics about interesting things and psychological detail and well-drawn characters. I like Cat and Girl. So, yeah. Nobody scores. Great. I like stupid things happening to people and people blowing shit up.
Yeah.
Thing part, also great.
Why not?
You know, I don't read that as much as I often.
Why not? It's this
webcomic. Wait, that syntax made no
the
sense.
The cops are coming, guys.
Yeah.
Why not's a webcomic where a girl takes like super like cute kawaii like things and has them behaving badly. It's very good.
Yeah, between Gag Comics and Dresden Kodak and Fishtown.
Nice.
It's pretty much
all. Really got in there.
I have to give a shout out to a lot of the Activate guys too, because the stuff they're like Dean Haspiel, I think, is nominated for an Eisner this year for Immortal, which is excellent. And that's one in particular that I like a lot. And Mike Cavallaro's new one, Leviathan, is really good as well. So.
I mean, I feel like there's a real scene developing in terms of webcomics through things like Activate, Chemistry Set, and Suda, sort of leading the charge there. And obviously there's a lot of other websites around there, but them serving as a focus point almost for this is great.
Well, we're certainly trying to push it forward. It's kind of like we sort of look at it as being like the new indie comics, because honestly, who can really afford to drop a couple grand on printing up a floppy comic anymore? You just serialize it online, collect it into a book later. It's a web comics on paper. You know, it's a novel idea.
Somebody actually just asked me this this week, and because I started in the mini comic scene doing, you know, hand stable comics, and now moved onto the web. And I guess to me, like, web comics are mini comics with bandwidth, pretty much. anybody can do them as long as you've got a host and what have you. But
exactly.
And what the studios I think are doing, like Activate Chemistry Set, which Kevin and I started with, really, it kind of gives you a sense of community, to where the Activate guys, go out and really like spend a lot of their time together and really push each other forward, and sort of the Chemistry Set folks and the Zuda folks, and it's like a nice family.
And it gives people who want to find webcomics a focal point to go to and see, like, oh, this is where the quality ones are, and I don't have to go searching around or the internet, which is a sadistic wasteland.
But it's really cool, though, sort of levels the playing field for everybody, and like if you're any good, people will read your comic and they'll notice it, and you'll still get attention for it if it's any good, you know.
But there are plenty of webcomics out there that are large enough that they're not studio-based. You know, the ones that I read are actually the ones that are not involved in any of the studios, like Questionable Content and Player versus Player. And now I've actually started reading my friend Danielle does Girls with Slingshots. They're all great comics. They're not aligned with the studio, but you can find them out there through, I found actually Girls with Slingshots through the writer of High Moon, Dave Gallagher. So.
And Player versus Player gets published, too.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, that's it for your audience question. Yeah. It is time for our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Mr. P.
All right! Yeah! I don't know why I paused for that. All right, this is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. We give you an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics. Who would like $25 free? Raise your hand. Come on down. Anyone at all? Yeah, come on up.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your name?
Rocky.
Rocky, audience? Audience Rocky. All right. So today's trivia is about MoCA, which is the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art.
I curated
that show. Oh, cool. Well, you'll probably get all these right there. MoCA has many cool exhibits. Which one of these is an actual exhibit at MoCA? A, comics, true or false? B, monsters, things that go bump in the night? Or C, clever spinach placements in cartoons?
So it's you have the choice of either A, comics true or false, B, monsters, things that go bump in the night, and we both know it's not C.
So I'm gonna go with B.
Hey! Just one. All right, here we go. The main goal of Mocha is to educate the public about comic and cartoon art. It does so with exhibits and events. The biggest one being A, the Mocha Cook-Off, B, Mocha Art Festival, or C, Mocha How to Be Taken Seriously in Tights. So it's either the Mocha Cook-Off. All right, yeah, that's correct. The Mocha Art Festival, which is really cool. You guys definitely check it out. Here we go. Membership to Mocha helps fund programs and exhibits. Memberships are very cheap, but if you do get a membership, you can get, is it either A, free admission to the gallery, B, 10% discount at the Mocha gift shop, or C, invitations to members-only events, or D, all three, plus much, much more.
I'm going to go with D.
D is correct! Gift card for you! All right!
So, Keith, when did you start your job at Mocha?
Alex, it's funny you should mention. I start on Monday.
You're not working at Old Navy Kids anymore?
Nope.
Good.
Before Monday is Wednesday, which is tomorrow, which is New Comic Book Day. You go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. But what are you guys looking forward to that's coming out? Anything you guys looking forward to?
Plug away.
On Wednesday, Superman 676, written by a colleague of ours that is Vito Del Sante, who was on the chemistry set with Neil and I. And I've actually read the script and the book.
I actually really support this comic because there's that kind of a little bit of a backstory to it. It was originally supposed to appear in a Superman Confidential issue that got pulled just because apparently it didn't have like the name cachet, and they slid it into an open space in their as an inventory story. And if enough people support the comic, hopefully they'll realize that even guys who aren't named Jeff Johns and Grant Morrison can write comics too. So for those of us struggling, please support Superman 676.
Please support Superman.
Nice.
I'm going to plug Life Sucks, which is a graphic novel coming out tomorrow from Jessica Abel, who wrote La Perdita. We actually read an advanced copy of it. It's really fun, really awesome, really cool world.
Just
to spoil something that happens in the first 10 pages, but to give you the gist of the book. Essentially, vampires exist, but they have to work jobs just like the rest of us. So it's a really cool, very grounded book, and talking about the multicultural issue, I think they do a really nice job there of just having people who are multicultural, which is very cool.
That's speaking to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of multicultural, actually, the latest True Story, Swear to God, comes out tomorrow, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's by my friend Tom, who's writing the story about how he met the woman he's married to now, and it's set in San Juan in Puerto Rico. I think tomorrow is the wedding issue.
So it's like the comic version of How I Met My Mother.
Yes.
Wait, your mother.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the book I read.
Yeah.
I have it better yet.
Yeah, good luck.
I'll tell you guys about it later.
I'm looking forward to the new issue of Walking Dead. I didn't like this series for a while. I'm back on.
I'm going to say Batman R.I.P. Just because there's been a lot of hype and I want to see if it's backed up.
Nice.
Whoa.
All right, so pick those all up. A couple of little plugs before we go. Next week, we are going to have Cliff Chiang, who is the artist on Black Canary and Green Arrow. I always say Black Arrow and Green Canary for some reason.
But that's coming out tomorrow as well.
Yeah, cool. And also Ron Mars, who is the writer of Witchblade, which Pete
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway,
next week. Pete bust above your desk.
Yeah, yeah, it's Pete, and he's topless, and he has those things coming up. He's... Anyway, so that's coming next week. We're not going to talk about that ever again. So, you can check us out three times a week on pulpsecret.com, PULPsecret.com. We're going to review even more comic books, so check that out. A couple of people want to thank. We want to thank Neil for being on. Most of all, we want to thank you guys for hearing every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.